Dr. Nargis.
Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be on all of you. And maybe all have some break from this heat. But Mahan ended with the heat in Mecca and Medina. And I've taken out my jacket several times and put it back on to be a little formal when I present. But
take it off.
It's all right. I'm thinking of when I was in March for the lesser pilgrimage in Mecca. And you're dressed up from head to toe. Mm-hmm. And here we are. I'm taking my jacket off and putting it back. It didn't strike me even once to do that because there were so many more important things that one needed to connect as part of one's pilgrimage. Right? Mm-hmm. So the contrast of what the intentions are and where people start. And Mahan started off by saying, this is, you have this communal Eid that is coming up, the Eid al-Adha. And the actual celebration means the celebration of, or the sacrifice. So commemoration is what we look at in terms of Ishmael or Isaac. And the father, and I think all three traditions have had to deal with some of the modern and postmodern questions about, you know, what kind of a God is this to us for the son sacrifice, right? And I'm not going to go there. I don't have the time to do that. I think Thomas Mann's huge work deals with a lot of that. I think the idea of the Eid al-Adha and where it brings the step, I really appreciated Dr. Gibbs's presentation, the social justice. Even if you don't attend the later text, maybe you do want to carry the one page each that David and I have prepared for the text that talk about what Dr. Mirza ended with, which was really this inner journey. But what I will do in these few minutes, perhaps talk about what Dr. Seidman started with, is this whole notion of what the rituals mean and how powerful they are. When you don a certain sense, a certain kind of clothing with which goes what you're supposed to think about. It is not all, sometimes I say to my students, it's, you know, God is not this plush toy and, you know, this hugging sort of kind one. You need to think about your mortality, your deaths, your accountability. And I think that many of these rituals in some form or another, when we talk about pilgrimages, no matter what we try to do in terms of that inner pilgrimage, the outer, the social justice, think about historical figures, I think nothing strikes one as much deeply as one's own mortality. And perhaps that is the most important part, and somehow to enact that is an extremely important part of one's training, where the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, is said to have said in one of the hadiths, which the Sufis loved, mutu qablan tamutu, die before you die. So this idea of death and certain rituals associated with that enactment of one's own death, they go further out and talk about, again, with Sukkot or other aspects of each of the traditions, the agricultural tradition, this happening constantly in nature, in the universe, this life and death, the idea of winter and then spring again, as the resurrection is an important one, and it happens to each one of us visually every single year, but nothing strikes as much as thinking about one's own death. And so I think we continue with that beautiful picture of Mecca, but I want to give you some of the facts. So today is the 6th of Dhul-Hijjah, which is the last month of the Muslim lunar calendar. And most of the time, the Hajj itself, the pilgrimage, the Muslim pilgrimage, will happen between the 8th and the 12th of Dhul-Hijjah. So the pilgrims are already there in Mecca. Some of them may be in Medina and headed to Mecca, depending on how you start. You could go to the 13th. The chant, this idea of death again is one of the most powerful aspects of this, no matter what the physical conditions are, whether it was ease later or ease earlier, the most powerful of this that one feels constantly is this readiness. And what is chanted as one approaches the Kaaba is Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik La Sharika Laka Labbaik Inna Alhamda Wal Ni'mata Laka Wal Mulk La Sharika Laka. That's constantly chanted. And the meaning, here I am, my Lord, I am ready, I am here. There is no deity that can be compared to you. There is no partner that you have. All praise is geared to you, and all blessing comes from you, and there is no partner that one can ascribe to you. So this is, in that sense, even though it's the most open and communal and public act, one chant makes it so private and so personal and such a direct relationship with God at that moment, where no matter how many times one says this, one gets ready. And as you get ready, again, very similar to wearing your shroud, the ihram, in the state of purity, this is the ritual attire, and I'll show you pictures of men generally doing this. Women can stay in what they are. There are some restrictions, but you have the a two-piece, generally sort of towel kind of material, two pieces what resembles the shroud at death, one piece that men tie from their waist down to their below the knee, and the other that they have, that they cover their top, but one part of your body, upper body, is to be left open. And there are different schools of thought about, or legal schools that say whether you can wear anything or not, but most of the time you cannot wear anything other than those two pieces. So you are stark naked under it. And it is a reminder of that death again. So really personal. The ceremonies, the rites that happen, one is called tawaf, which is circumambulating this Kaaba, acknowledging that Abraham built it, who rebuilt from what Adam had built, and you are circumambulating counterclockwise 7 times. Within that circulation, again, when we see pictures, you will see the black stone, which in Muslim tradition, either a meteorite that fell on earth, or whether Angel Gabriel brought it and installed it there, which is what gives that Kaaba its purity and sacred space again. So you have that, and many traditions also, particularly the inward-looking traditions, also talk about the fact that this does in some way mirror on earth. So those, the mass of people that you show, that you saw on the previous slide, when they are doing the tawaf, when they are circumambulating around, the Kaaba then stands for the throne of God and the angels that are constantly surrounding and going around. So in some ways, you are mirroring what's happening up in the heavens. You are acknowledging your mortality, and you're acknowledging the part that you are part of a community in this sense, a Muslim community, but the larger human community as well. Of course, one of the most important part that many Muslim feminists point out right now is the sa'i, the running between the two little rocks or little mountains, the Safa and Marwa. And this is again in the footsteps of Hajra, Hagar, and often Muslim feminists pick this up and say, everyone performs this, but today there are all kinds, some restrictions, where men are allowed to run between certain parts of it, but women are supposed to be more modest and not run. The idea is, no, Hagar ran, and you're running on them. So, you know, there is that. There is a lot of commemoration, a lot of remembrance on a faith, and one of the most important ritual built on a female's anguish and a female act to try and save. On the 9th day, so you start on the 8th day, you arrive and you spend the night in Mina, which is where you see often, if you've seen the pictures, and I'll show you in a minute, but I wanted to go through this. You stay in the tents, and of course, all said and done, the part that Mahan wanted to read about from Malcolm X was all about how his own racial politics changed when he went to Mecca for his pilgrimage and what he had seen in the United States about segregation. Here it was, a multitude of humanity, of all shades, all color coming together. And if we have time, we will probably play it or read it, where he came back and thought about his own racial understanding in politics in a very different race. There was that pilgrimage of transformation for one important black leader that changed an entire understanding of what it meant to be black in the United States and how that needs to be dealt with at a human and a humane level. So you have at Mina, having said that, the point I wanted to make is at Mina you have certain camps that are air conditioned and five star now, and there are others that particularly people from Asia and Africa can afford to come to that are non-air conditioned. But having said that, on the eighth night, everyone remains in Mina, and then you have Arafat. This is the open mountain where you go on the ninth day, and you stand again directly enacting the ritual of facing your Lord by yourself. It's called standing, it's called wukuf. And you stand there and you remember your life, as we are told at death that it's going to be a replay of the entire life. In this right now, one has the conscious way of replaying one's life and standing before God and acknowledging and trying to make amends for that. People return to a place called Muzdalifa, where they spend the night, again in open sky. You have an important ceremony there, as in the Christian tradition, which I recently saw, where you have this idea of no matter what, when God tests the human person, there is always something within that tries not to implement that. There are always personal reasons and selfishness, whatever it may be. It wasn't easy for Abraham to just say, oh, God said, sacrifice my favorite thing. He tried every which way. He tried to do sacrifice the goat, sacrifice this, sacrifice that, anything but his son. He wasn't left alone by God. And even there you have in Who is the Real Ishmael, we had this testimony where he had to have Ishmael's courage to do this. He was a willing participant in this. So your idea, that idea of three pillars, when you come back, you take symbolically little stones and you throw it at the devil. So the idea again is of that facing yourself internally and constantly talking about what are the obstacles in your way, connecting with the rest of humanity and God. And then there is the animal sacrifice on the last day, which Muslims on the 8th, which you all greeted us with, Eid al-Adha, around the world, most Muslims will sacrifice because eventually God accepted a ram in the place of Ishmael. And in commemoration of that, and of course in modern times, all kinds of different ways have been adopted. So they've had many accidents when you go to throw pebbles at the symbolic pebbles even, because it's a particular time in which it's to be done, and often one hears in the news about the hazard of this. So things have changed, and you'll see that. The sacrifice again, one is not present. This meat is sent all over the world for the poor now. So it's frozen, it's ritually sacrificed, and is sent all over the world. You come back and you do another circumambulation of the Kaaba itself, and then eventually, if you stay another couple of days, you do a third circumambulation of the Kaaba as a farewell. Okay, so here is where you'll see the journey that I have just described in a nicely diagram from Wikipedia of the number one, which is Miqat. And that is a entry point where you make the intention of performing the Hajj, the greater pilgrimage, or as I've done a few times, I haven't performed the Hajj, but the Umrah, which is the lesser pilgrimage, and there are certain rituals that are not done. So at number one, you don the ihram, you don the garment, and you make the intention. At number two, you come to the Kaaba and you do your circumambulation and you go immediately to the encampment at Mina. Number three, and you move on to the plain of Arafah. The plain of Arafah, in Arabic, Arafah also means to know. To know and having known something, and there are all kinds of connotations of that. So one of the first Shia Imams talks about the fact, which we know from Socratic sort of faith, is Mana Arafa nafsahu faqad arafa rabba. That whoever knows oneself knows God. So this idea of standing in the desert heat directly and praying to God, this idea of knowledge becomes extremely important. Knowing oneself, knowing one's intention, you come back to Muzdalifah, spend a night there. When you're returning to Mina now at the encampment, that is when the three stones, the three pillars are there, and they have changed quite a bit to minimize the accidents. So here is what you have in that cubical structure. One side of it, in the pictures you will see, this is a circumambulation. Counterclockwise, you have the Sa'i. These are the two mountains, the Safa and Marwa. This is the footsteps of Hagar. And you can see now that Sa'i is all being built up. It's not open anymore. So it's built up. Even the floors are air conditioned, thanks to petrodollars that the Saudis have, and a lot of income that comes from there. I'm good for time. 2 minutes. Okay. Oops. All right. So this is where people are going between, and the middle lane is left for the handicap. This is the tents at Mina that I was talking about. Recently, you may have heard some controversy about people saying, well, you could actually house 50 to 60,000 refugees that Europe is refusing, and one could house there, and the Saudis say they're constantly trying to make it better, but right now it's the Hajj season. So this is the camps that we're talking about. This is Mount Arafah, but most importantly, you see the Ihram. The men have the two pieces, the women are covered, but this particular, the one prohibition for women is not to cover their faces here. They cannot, they cover their hair, but their head, but not their faces. This is Muzdalifah, which is the one time they spend the night, open skies, everyone spends the night here. And often in all of these, whether it is the Ihram, whether it's the donning of the garment, whether it is spending that night under open skies, people have often been, like Malcolm X, many others have also always been really touched, and it's that stark realization of all of human beings being equal. Even if in Mina you may have different camps, now, it didn't used to be the case, they've also got, instead of the pillars, now they have the walls. So when you throw the pebbles there, there is a little fountain that usually catches it rather than, I have a hilarious story in preparation for this. I've read many others, but this was the one I read for the first time, a South African Hajj. And she has a hilarious story of how one of them got really badly injured because somebody decided to really shoot the devil really hard, except was not considerate of the person, the pilgrim in front of him, and so he got really hurt and burned. So now you have different kinds. You've got the pillar, earlier part. In the early part of the century, you have different kinds. There is that wall now. You've also got other locations when you can do it, and the little pebbles that can be deadly. When one does the circumambulation, one comes to the water of Zamzam, which is what either angel directed Hagar to look for, or in the Muslim tradition, often the story is that the little toddler Ishmael basically rubbed his heel on the ground and water came out of there, and that water has continued for as many centuries and millennia. So you have the water of Zamzam. That is the black stone on the extreme right. This one here is the Maqam Ibrahim. You see the foot, the mark in silver of the station of Abraham. And usually after circumambulation, you actually pray there. This is again one of the idea. You get a pretty good idea. Of course, many of these have different doors as well. And this is finally, after you perform the Hajj, you've made your sacrifices. Men usually either shave their hair head off completely or at least cut a bit, and women do a little bit again after the sacrifice. And most people, although not required, will go to Medina after. Some people choose, many of the Shias will go to Medina before they actually start the Hajj. In addition to the three places that Maha mentioned, Mecca, Medina, Jerusalem for the Shias, Najaf and Karbala. in Iraq and Iran also are extremely important places of worship. Among the Shias and the Sufis, the inner Hajj and this whole notion of ethical behavior and social justice, which is what my text upon from a 10th century poet that I would like you to read, where he questions each of the ritual that the Haji, the one who's performing the Hajj, has performed and asked him, did you do this? Did you think of this when you threw stones at the devil? Did you look inside and take every bit out of you that is blameworthy? So this is the beautiful mosque of the Prophet in Medina. I particularly love it. It also has, thank God, to the sort of the modern amenities and the work that has been put in. You have these, the mosque will look certainly very different in the afternoon because huge, huge multi-sized umbrellas will open up, multiple of them, and cover the whole courtyard, and the ground is air conditioned. So it is a lot easier, but with the numbers, right now 2 to 3 million people, even though with limitations on how many each country can send. But then you have the Kumbh Mela in India, where you have none of this, and you have, you know, 4 or 5 million people going again. An interesting thing about pilgrimage, as I was reading up, and during the time when the Shias go to the Arba'in, the 40th day of the sacrifice of Imam Hussein, there's supposed to be anywhere between 25 and 31 million people that visit during a certain period of time. So thank you for the opportunity to think about what pilgrimage means in most of our tradition. I wanted to end with something that Sister Marian said at the beginning. She said, well, you know, we could really qualify in this season. And I have to end with that because I really did identify with that. She said, well, yeah, there's the Jewish season and the Muslim season. But, you know, we could easily come in here because the Pope is visiting. And my immediate reaction was, do I love this Pope? So, you know, that would be a really lovely pilgrimage as well. And I'm going to watch it on Verizon Fios, which is covering the real event. But this is the Pope that really is what Rabbi Gottlieb talked about, the social justice and gender justice in, as, you know, as much of the way as one can within, you know, deep entrenched traditions. So I hope that, you know, thank you for many of my colleagues who went earlier. I was really touched and inspired by many of the presentations. Thank you.